WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The decades or two before we become senior citizens can be a tumultuous time. Kids leaving the nest, health scares, job changes, divorce, or even wondering what's next are suddenly all on the table. While this can cause some confusion and heartache, it doesn't need to be a time of crisis. If we shift how we think about the aging process, it can in fact be a time to transform, to connect with ourselves, and chart a new path. That's what Chip Conley argues in his book, Learning to Love Midlife, 12 Reasons Why Life Gets Better with Age. He's also the founder of the Modern Elder Academy. So I sat down with Chip, along with Lowell Nelson, a retiree and volunteer at the Greater Chicago Food Depository and with the Chicago Greeter Service, which gives visitors tours of the city. I started off by asking Chip to help us define midlife. Here's Chip.
Well, you know, it's like a country whose boundaries keep changing. Back 50 years ago, it was 40 to 60, and then it became 40 to 65, and then today, a lot of sociologists and gerontologists say it's 35 to 75.
Wow.
Because 18 to 35 is young adulthood, and 75 and beyond is later adulthood. And between young or early adulthood and later adulthood is mid-adulthood, midlife. So
wow.
It's a marathon.
Okay. So we go from young adulthood to midlife, just like that?
That's true. Well, and why is that? What's going on here? Number one is on the back end side, I think it's most obvious that with increased longevity and people living into their 80s and 90s and maybe even to be a centenarian at 100, the fact is that, you still may be in midlife and still working in your early 70s and certainly be fit and healthy and more so than maybe 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But why is midlife inching earlier? And part of the reason for that is some of the issues that people are faced with in their mid-30s, especially around career irrelevance, are actually growing, where people feel like, wow, AI or technology is going to take over my job, and what the hell am I going to do?
Mm.
And so long story short is midlife being 40 years long, or even if you just think it's 30 years long, it's a life stage that has not been given enough attention.
Yeah.
And all it's been tagged with is a bad brand, the midlife crisis.
Yes, and we will get into that some more. I'm curious what your experience has been in this time of your life, Chip.
Wow. Well, I am now 63, and my time between 45 and 50 was awful. I enjoyed my late 30s and my early 40s, but as is true based upon the U-curve of happiness research, which shows that people generally bottom out around 45 to 50, and then they get happier after age 50, that happened to me as well. And I think it's because I had way too many things happening in my life. You have children, you have aging parents, you have a career that, you know, you're either happy with or you're a little disappointed. You haven't gotten further.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of financial obligations. And so in my late 40s, I really struggled. Ultimately, I had an NDE, a near-death experience, due to an allergic reaction to an antibiotic. But that really woke me up to saying, how do I want to live my life differently? But I did lose 5 male friends, ages 42 to 52, to suicide between 2008 and 2010.
Oh.
So I know it is an era that is fraught with a lot of sometimes emotional disturbance.
Right. Wow, I'm so sorry to hear about that, Chip. Now, before I bring you into the conversation, Lowell, Chip, I want you to define something for me. In the book, you talk about the chrysalis mindset. What is that?
Yeah. So we're very familiar with the term the midlife crisis, as if, you know, the average person at age 45 says, I want to be an adolescent again and, you know, buy a red sports car and have an affair with, as Kevin Spacey did in American Beauty, with his daughter's best friend in high school. That is not the normal thing that happens to people in midlife. Often what people feel is they feel stuck. Antidepressant use goes up. But the number one thing that I think is really interesting is that after age 50, people tend to get happier. So something's happening around 45 to 50. Mm-hmm. And so I call it the midlife chrysalis, because the chrysalis is the midlife for the butterfly, between caterpillar and butterfly.
Right.
And it's in that chrysalis where the transformation happens. And so it's a much more positive perspective on what your years after age 50 can be.
Gotcha. Now, Lowell, you did not see these years of your life as a crisis. So tell us what your midlife experience was like.
As we were listening to Chip talk about the transition, I literally had the thoughts that, well, I don't want a sports car. My wife wouldn't want me to have an affair. So I got myself involved with Chicago's bicycle community, you know, bicycle for transportation, yeah, not high speed, not racing, mm-hmm, not mountain bikes, but just bike commuting and getting around town by bike. And that's what I still do to this day. Mm-hmm. You know,
so you decided to get active?
Right. We sold our car 4 years ago, 5 years ago, moved from the suburbs into the city, had no need for a car. Now I get nearly everywhere by Divvy bikes.
Oh.
And I obviously use the CTA for longer trips, but largely by Divvy. And I rarely drive.
Yeah. And during this phase too, Lowell, you remarried in your 40s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And had a daughter.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
So all of that happened during midlife.
Yes.
For you.
Exactly.
So what a significant time of transformation then.
Right. Yeah. So it was a big change, but it's worked out very well. Obviously, I've got a daughter, and then I also have a stepson,
mm-hmm,
and they're both, you know, launched adults, doing well.
Doing well.
And they both live on the West Coast now. Mm. And so now
it's been easy breezy.
I'm trying to enjoy life.
Sounds good. So, and
Lowell,
if you're...
Could I ask a question to Lowell?
Sure.
So you feel more purposeful, or maybe not more, but you feel a different sense of purpose at this stage in your life. How old are you now?
73.
So does it feel like there's a different sense of purpose today than, say, 20 or 30 years ago?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Of course. And I sort of have in my mind the, it's kind of like they talk about the tripod for financial stability, to have a pension, savings, a retirement money. And I think of sort of a similar tripod for retirement, to have health, finances in order, and social connections. Mm. And I see two of those are pretty easy to assess, whether, you know, you go to the doctor, you get a good idea what your health is. You look at your bank statement or your investment portfolio, and you know what your, look at your assets, and then you have a pretty good idea how you are financially. But making the switch over socially is, in my mind, sort of the most difficult aspect of it.
Now let's jump to the phones. Elizabeth is calling from Albany Park. Hey, Elizabeth, what's your midlife moment?
So it's, sorry, I always like laugh because I know a lot of people are getting ready to send their kids off to college. And I had a baby at 45.
Oh,
and
congrats.
Thank you. It's amazing, right? I'm turning 50 at the end of this year. And I was like 41 years old. I was not in a relationship. And I all of a sudden just had this like moment, and it came out of a dream where I was like, oh, I should become a parent. And I looked into adopting, and then I decided to have IVF. And I was very fortunate. I had her on the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And at 45, I gave birth to this amazing child named Miriam Sky. And she has healed so much of some childhood trauma that I had. And I feel so young, and I feel alive, and I'm just absolutely in love with my child. And it's
the best
decision I've ever made in my life.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Bike riding, and I just, I try to stay healthy so I can be with her for a very long time, mm-hmm. and it's the best decision I made.
Oh, I really appreciate you sharing this, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for calling, and congrats again. That's so wonderful to hear. I want to jump to one more caller here, Brian in Evanston. Hey, Brian.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm turning 30 next week, and I know that's not like midlife or what most people consider to be midlife, but it gets pretty existential, I think, when I'm recognizing I'm officially leaving my 20s. And one of the things that I try to do is to just acknowledge that it's not like I'm not done growing or learning. Mm-hmm. I'm in grad school, so part of my job is still, you know, trying to learn and grow.
Yes.
And then I continue to do things that try to challenge myself in new ways. Like I've been learning how to play the saxophone. I've never played it really an instrument seriously. And
yeah.
It just keeps things exciting so that I can constantly look forward to the future and to think about who I'll be in, you know, the next decade.
The best is yet to come, Brian, I promise. Thank you for sharing that. And Chip, this is a good time to bring you back in here because some people have the idea that this time of life, you know, it's a slow decline from here on out. And in your book, you write that, you know, many conversations around middle age, they focus on what's been lost. I'm reminded of that when I hear Brian speak, maybe, you know, from going from his 20s to his 30s. Why do you think this is?
So the playing field that we think of in terms of our self-worth in the U.S. tends to be our body. There's a lot of reasons for that. And yes, your body does decline over time. I can tell you from personal experience. But there are all kinds of other ways that you know we can monitor or look at our life. There are other playing fields, the playing field of the heart, you know, the mind or the spirit or cultural curiosity. And so what a lot of people do is they tend to focus on the physical losses as opposed to what gets better. And our emotional intelligence improves, our wisdom improves, mm-hmm. our ability to understand ourselves improves. And I think the question that I love that what Brian brought up is the question I like to ask. We have a place called the Modern Elder Academy with two campuses, one in Baja, one in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The number one question I like to ask our over 5,000 alumni is 10 years from now, what will you regret if you don't learn it or do it now?
Mm.
Because whether it's having a baby at 45, or it's actually starting to learn saxophone at 30, or in my case, learning to surf at 57 and learning Spanish.
Wow.
Because I was in Mexico. Asking yourself the questions of what you'll regret is a form of anticipated regret, is a form of wisdom.
Yeah.
And so I highly recommend asking that question because it will catalyze you to maybe try to become a beginner at something.
Yeah, no, these are good points. Lowell, Chip writes in the book too, aging is a privilege and quote, a gift of time. Was there any point, were you ever afraid to grow older?
No, not really. I just want to refer to the previous caller who talked about a child at 45.
Yes,
my wife,
Elizabeth,
coincidentally had a child at 45.
Yeah.
And what that enabled her to do, she's worked at the Chicago Tribune, and journalism was shrinking at that time, and she was able to get out at a good time from journalism and retire a little early, and that allowed her to spend time with her daughter. Previous to that, I was mm-hmm. sort of the parent because I worked close to home, and she worked downtown, and we lived in the suburbs. So then she got to go to the PTA meetings and the bake sales and that kind of stuff and enjoy those with our daughter for a few years before she went off to college.
Oh, that's amazing. Because, of course, we know getting pregnant at 45, there are a lot of narratives that come with that, right? And sometimes you're pumped with fear just mm-hmm. from physicians alone, right? Oh, you're too seasoned to be doing this.
No, she was immediately classified as high risk.
You're high risk immediately.
Right.
Of course, lots of checkups along the way,
mm-hmm.
rightfully so, but there's also a beautiful experience on the other end of this.
Right.
For sure. Did you ever experience that feeling that comes with a lot of folks going through the transitions, Lowell, of like losing a sense of direction?
Well, we also, through her working at the Tribune, we were able to personally meet a lot of journalists from developing countries who came to on a program to papers in the United States. Mm-hmm. And then we had that as a goal once we were both retired to go and visit them, which we did. So we went to over a period. We started in 2016 when I retired, and then we went to about 50 countries around the world.
Amazing.
Visiting these people. And then the pandemic hit, and we didn't travel. So we were very fortunate on the timing on that we were able to do that. And we didn't stay in first-class hotels. We did Airbnbs yeah. in various places. Our best experience while traveling was a $27 Airbnb in Greece.
Oh, my goodness.
In Athens.
And I got to get some tips from you.
And it was right below the Parthenon. And the host invited us, because he had two or three different properties, and he invited all of the people who were staying in his properties up on the rooftop for a dinner.
Oh, my gosh. You are living it up for this middle age. Chip, how important is this connection to community, you know, when we think about, you know, having a vibrant life as we age?
I love what Lowell's talking about, because for seven and a half years, I was the modern elder to the founders of Airbnb. So it's great to hear that story. And there's for those who are interested in traveling later in life, there's a couple from Seattle who've been on the road for 10 years now on Airbnb. That's called Senior Nomads, seniornomads.com.
Okay.
Check it out. I think that what's really essential, as Bob Waldinger at Harvard has shown in an 86-year-long study now, is that the number one variable for living a healthy, happy, longer life is how invested are we in our social relationships in midlife and beyond. And for a lot of people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, because of all of the family and the career and travel and moving, people sometimes lose track of friendships. And I think Lowell was really talking about the one that's hardest. The hardest thing for us to measure is our social relations. Mm-hmm. But it's the most important one. And Blue Zones, Dan Buettner, who started that movement and is on our faculty at MEA, the Modern Elder Academy, he's also shown that, like, hey, there's 9 variables for living a great long life. But the most important one of them is how connected are we to our friends and family, and how deep are those connections? It's not about quantity. It's more about quality time together. So, you know, the question you might want to ask yourself is, how do you think of friendship as a practice? And if it's a practice, how do you get better at it because you're practicing friendship?
Yeah.
And it's a whole new way of thinking about friendships.
I love that. Let's squeeze in one more caller before we got to go. Here's Catherine in Grays Lake. Hey, Catherine.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, what's your midlife story?
Well, I'm listening and I'm very interested, and I agree about friendships. I could say I don't have a huge, a lot of friends, like real close friends.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's the quality, not quantity. And I do live in a senior 55 and older building in northern suburbs of Illinois, and it's been, for the most part, it's been wonderful. I mean, we have a community. People get together when they want to. They do all kinds of, you know, things. They play cards. There's groups that do their thing. I have become a garden, I won't say expert, but I love it. I have learned so much over the years of doing it now. There's just a few of us because we can do the physical stuff, thankfully. And I'm young at heart in the sense I used to work concerts and events for jam production about 15 years ago. I love music. I love seeing live music. I think music is a huge, deal as far as getting out in all the, you know, festivals and going as
I love that so much. Music heals all. Catherine, and I love that you said you're young at heart. Leave us with this, Chip. One word from you each, if you will, Chip and Lowell. You know, it's important, you write about, that folks leave some sort of legacy behind. What's your legacy, Chip?
Well, I think legacy is with a small L as opposed to a capital L. Yeah. Let's start with that. And I think it's curiosity.
Curiosity. What about you, Lowell?
Well, we, among our travels, we happened to have gone to Malawi to visit a journalist that we knew from that program. And now, just for the last four years ago, we sponsored a girl from a rural town through her, you know, residential high school experience. And she just started college now in Malawi.
What a legacy.
And so we just got recently registered as a nonprofit organization. And so we're trying to extend the reach.
That's incredible.
In that little community.
That's Lowell Nelson and Chip Conley. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and Micah Yasin, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Max Lubers. You just heard from some of our listeners during that conversation. And here on Reset, we love to interact with you. We have plenty of opportunities to do that through our newsletter, so please consider signing up at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again this afternoon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.